It's here and now. Depression affects 1 in 6 people at some point in their lives. Would that there was a way to find out when it starts in the hopes of addressing it. Well, researchers at the University of Cambridge in England say they've developed what might be the first biological test to do just that. It's a saliva test for teenage boys with mild symptoms of depression, but researchers say it can help identify which of the teens might later develop full-blown clinical depression. Professor Joe Herbert led the research. He joins us from the University of Cambridge. Professor Herbert, welcome.
Thank you very much.
And can you start with which boys you're talking about? What are mild symptoms of depression that might lead to this test?
Well, depression is a kind of gradual thing, and there are now guidelines for separating people with minor depressive symptoms, you know, sort of a bit miserable, but not nearly depressed enough for their lives to be affected in any serious way. Those are what we call depressive symptoms. But there's quite a jump between that situation and one where you get full major depression, which in an adolescent boy is going to have major effects on his life, wreck his friendships and his education and his really prospects.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just to as people are thinking about their own children, so just somebody who's just really low and logy and maybe doesn't want to go out and play, as opposed to someone who really is terribly crippled by depression. You tested more than 18,000, is it, teenagers? Measured the level of
No, it's 1,700.
Oh, sorry, 1,700. A little an extra zero there. And measured the level of the stress hormone cortisol in their saliva. What did you find?
When you measure hormones in the morning, cortisol has a big rhythm, so it's high in the morning and low in the evening in everybody. But the height in the morning varies between people. And when you measure in a lot of boys like this, you find there's a great variation. Now, when we separated those who had a higher level and, together with that, a fairly high score on this depressive scale, which didn't measure clinical depression, it measured a depression, as it were, in the normal range, we found that this predicted to a very large degree the boys who were come depressed within the next 3 or 4 years. In fact, 25% of them became depressed.
So a higher rate of the stress hormone cortisol, which occurs naturally in the body,
that's right.
Seemed to turn out that those young boys, 3 or so years later, had a more severe form of depression.
That's right.
Yep.
We've known for quite a long time that cortisol, which, by the way, is an essential hormone, you need it to be alive. We know very well that that becomes dysregulated in depression. And we also know that it becomes dysregulated sometimes before depression. But this was a fairly... an effect which was detectable wasn't particularly large. And when we added to the symptoms of depression, the effect becomes much larger. So together, the two are a much better predictor than either alone.
Hmm. But how about testing on teenage girls? Was it the same?
It wasn't the same. The cortisol had no effect. It was just depressive symptoms. So the males and the females, boys and girls, were similar in that depressive symptoms predicted their risk for getting depressed. But for boys, cortisol added something, whereas girls it didn't. Now, that doesn't mean that cortisol isn't active in girls, because you need to know that girls naturally have higher levels of cortisol than boys. So we wonder whether they've already exceeded the threshold, if you like, which would make them a risk for depression. All they need now is depression, is the symptoms of mild depression to add to that. But I must emphasize that's, you know, a conjecture.
It's a question.
We still need to analyze more data on that.
Yeah, well, but still a provocative thought. Well, but so what is what you have found? Tell doctors, where do you think this should go?
Well, when you have a predictor, which is as powerful as this, there are several ways it can go. One, of course, you can develop a screening test, and it's as important to monitor the mental health of adolescents as it is their physical health, for example, their fitness. And you could use these tests to do exactly that. And the important thing for there is that you can pick out boys, and indeed probably girls, actually, who are at high risk of depression and keep an eye on them for two reasons. First of all, when they do get depressed, they get early and prompt treatment. That makes a big difference to the outcome. And secondly, we do know that even in an advanced country like yours and indeed mine, a large proportion of depressed adolescents are never diagnosed. They never get near a doctor. And that's bad news for them because, of course, they don't get treatment.
So let's say there is a simple test that's developed based on your research, and there's a saliva test of young boys in particular, and it's found that they have high cortisol rates in addition to the symptoms that they have of depression. Could you then say, look, this is a young kid who maybe shouldn't be told to worry as much about a test that's keeping him up to one in the morning? In other words, are the high stress rates because of stress?
Not necessarily stressed. There are lots of ways that cortisol can be high. Stress is one of them, and you can certainly look into that. If they had, for example, high levels of anxiety, you could reduce that by various ways and see if you can reduce cortisol. But yes, the other point I was going to make is that when you find these predictors of an illness, then of course it may give you some idea of what's causing the illness, or at least these can be some of the factors causing it. And that means that if you can modify these factors, for example, you can reduce the depressive symptoms or reduce levels of cortisol, you might be able to quite remarkably reduce the risk of depression. And because depression is such a common illness in young people and so devastating, even if you only halved it or less than that, you'd have quite a dramatic effect. Mm.
But again, I think you were beginning to say, the high stress levels, in the high cortisol levels, might not necessarily be tangibly stress-related. There might be another reason, and there are things you can do to lower it.
That's quite right. Yeah. There are a lot of reasons why levels of cortisol can be high, apart from current stress. For example, you can have particular genes which raise your cortisol. Or the other way is that children who have a history of poor parenting, particularly mothers, for example, who've had a depression themselves after childbirth and therefore haven't been able to give their children the care they otherwise would, these children can have high levels of cortisol even 10 or 15 years later. So there are a whole variety of reasons why levels of cortisol can be higher or lower in different children.
Huh. That's Joe Herbert, professor in the Department of Clinical Neurosciences at the University of Cambridge in England. Their research claims that a high stress level, a high level of cortisol, might indicate a child who's suffering depression. They've got a saliva test. We'll see where that goes. Professor Herbert, thanks so much for talking to us about it.
It's been a great pleasure.
You're listening to Here and Now.